We are back with more of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North. Every month we talk with cellist Robert Cohen about the life of a touring classical musician. It's a segment that we call On That Note. This month finds Robert recently moved to the Suffolk countryside in England, and in between packing boxes and hooking up utilities, he's thinking about creativity. He says that having a quiet, beautiful space like the one he now has is really important.
I have very powerful memories of practicing my cello at my grandparents' cottage and being sort of in seventh heaven, the sort of solitude, but the somehow the age of the, I think it was the 17th century cottage, and playing my old cello in that surroundings. I used to practice fantastically well, be really absorbed and amazingly focused, and just could practice all day long. And the energy was wonderful. And now I'm here, I'm actually really feeling a very similar thing, that when I'm playing my cello in a kind of 17th century cottage and my cello being made in 1723, there seems to be a certain sort of natural connection between the wood of my instrument and the wood that surrounds me. And I don't know why, it's inspiring, and it gives me a sense of, you know, a greater sense of adventure in the music as I'm practicing. So I am finding, it's very early days, but I'm finding that very exciting, and it's a beautiful feeling. But aside from when I'm practicing, of course, that quietness, when you, the rest of your life is so ridiculously noisy, if you like, and busy and so on, it's definitely seems to give me space to think, which is, I suppose, what I've been looking for so long. And that's allowed me also just in the last few weeks to put my thoughts together for a whole variety of lectures and talks that I've been giving, a whole batch of them recently. And I found that having that kind of flow now, and having to put my work, my ideas into words and communicate them in words to people, has really inspired me to find better ways of explaining what we do as musicians, and better ways of getting giving advice, guidelines to musicians. And in doing all these lectures, I kind of feel that I'm dealing with a lot of things to do with creativity and to do with well-being and mental health, and just understanding really the multitasking that we are so involved in music.
Exactly.
I mean, it just astounds me.
It is astounding, and I'm not anywhere near your level. But you know, I practiced as a kid. I played music. My dad was a bassoonist, and both my brother and I played different instruments. And so, you know, I know from a very, very, very amateur way what that's like to kind of focus and having to coordinate all of those different things. That one of the things that always frustrated me so much was that it felt like the creative piece of making music was somewhere over there, and I couldn't quite get to it because my technique or lack of it was in the way, or, you know, I needed to learn more things, or I didn't have my hands coordinated well enough and I was still learning how to do that. You've obviously learned how to harness all of those things and yet still have that creative force flow through you. But I found it so frustrating. Do your students find that frustrating?
Well, I think what everybody finds frustrating and, or, you know, it's incredibly hard work, is just the number of things that are required just to play a simple scale in music. Because, you know, not only are you dealing with what both hands are doing separately, and they're doing different things, all the fine motor controls that are required, then the coordination between your hands, and then, of course, your entire body, because that's, you know, your energy and your balance and how you move. And all of those things have to be, you know, refined to such a degree, the kind of elite athlete level, in order to just make a reasonable sound. And then on top of all those physical things, there's that kind of, you know, you've got to have stamina to be able to do that, even just for, you know, half an hour, an hour at a time. So that means a kind of fitness. And then, of course, then you're focusing on so many different things. You've got, you know, the quality of the sound, the kind of the character of the sound is decided upon by how physically you move every finger, how you move your body, and the shape of the phrase, you know, the particular musical stresses, all of those sorts of things. And then your understanding of the music and the architecture of the music, and you're having to be so conscious of this while you're trying to play your simple line of music. And then you're thinking, well, what am I thinking about while I'm doing that? And what am I feeling? And then all your kind of expectations of what you'd like and your desires and your kind of worries about, you know, is it going to go well? Isn't it going to go well? I mean, there are just so many things that you're putting on yourself in order to just to play a simple phrase or a simple piece of music really beautifully. I mean, there are so many, you know, you're putting your brain to incredible amount of activity. And that, when you're practicing every day, or if you're having difficulties, of course, then it can be really easy to get down. I mean, if you're not managing to do all of those things at the same time, then something's going wrong. I mean, things are, you know, it doesn't sound very good, or, you know, which is the worst thing, actually. I think when the sound is bad, especially musicians, really hate that. We're kind of practically crying and think how terrible it is and what a disaster we are because one note in the line didn't sound right. You know, we're so critical of ourselves.
Well, and I think what it is too is that it's not what you hear in your head. You know, whatever the music, however it sounds in your head and the way you think it needs to be, getting that to reproduce on whatever instrument you're doing is, of course, the challenge. And trying to match up, as you said, those expectations with what you hear. And so where does creativity come into it? I mean, it may be a very odd question to ask, because we think of music as a creative pursuit, and it is. But where does it come in to all of the other parts of it in order to make it sound good?
Well, you know, I feel that there is just a kind of real magical power of music, and that it has such a strong energy and it's so emotional. And if you really can sing the music in your head, if you can feel the music in your body, if you can be a part of the emotional journey and the language, the composer, that starts to kind of take over your body, take over your ideas. And then just hearing the sound that starts to go in that direction, that's inspiring even on a microscopic level. So if you feel in a phrase of music by Johannes Brahms that there is a fabulous romanticism, and you can feel that as you change from one note to the next note, just because of the twist in harmony and what it does inside your stomach, you know, and how it, you know, the frisson from that. When you feel that for a moment, that's like a speck, a moment in time which inspires you. It pulls you and it makes you feel that you want to go on to the next note, and then from that note and so on. And so you suddenly find yourself really deeply involved in the tiniest twists and turns of the musical journey. And of course, you have to let go of all those worries and those kind of technical things that you've got to think about. They have to be able to flow, and you have to be able to let your mind go.
Do you think that practicing in and of itself is creative?
Oh, I feel now, especially at this point in my life, that it's incredibly creative, because it's about exploring all the time. I mean, you know, I don't want to play a piece of music the same way I've played it before. So now it's all about finding other ways of looking at it and going deeper into every part of the music. So for me now, practicing is very exciting, and it's a great exploration. And when I make discoveries, of course, they're my discoveries, if you like. So I'm given strength and confidence by the fact that I've found something new, and I experiment with it, I work with it, And in that adventure, it makes me feel that I am doing something creative with the music, very, very definitely.
Most of us grew up with the idea that, you know, practice is the work, and you do the work and you put in the time, and then the performance, you know, is the creative part. And I think a lot of people still think that way. But I wonder if we put too much pressure on the performance if we don't also include the practice and the working toward it as part of the whole process.
I think you're absolutely right. I think being creative takes an enormous amount of practice. I don't think that you can just expect to turn it on at a certain moment, especially to turn it on, you know, and you get on the platform when there are so many pressures on you and expectations and you know, the adrenaline and so on. So to be suddenly thinking, oh, now's the moment I have to be creative, I think that's really tough. And I just think that we cannot be good at it because we haven't done it often enough. But definitely the whole question of making mistakes and allowing yourself to make mistakes, I think is vital, actually. It's vital when you experiment that you try things. And when it's wrong, you should somehow think, I've learned so much from that. I'm so pleased to have discovered what is wrong, because that helps me discover, you know, at least rule that out for the next steps, mm-hmm. to say, you know, that doesn't work. So now let me go in a different direction. And I just really commit to that completely different direction. And if it turns out that that direction is a disaster, or maybe there are just some elements that are okay, but you know you're not going to go down that road again, you have learned something very important in terms of which direction you're going to go in with your creativity. So I think the mistakes are vital, and they actually should be taken as positive ways of moving forward. And we do learn so much from what doesn't work, don't we?
If we allow ourselves to be open to it, because a lot of times in our society, making mistakes is frowned upon. You're not supposed to make mistakes. You're supposed to do it right, whatever right is. And I've often thought that doing it right can be the enemy of creativity. If you're so married to whatever what you think right is, it doesn't allow you to breathe and room for other things. All of the things you were talking about, the discovery, the finding new things to say and to experience within a piece of music, if you're so focused on only playing it whatever somebody has dictated is the right way, then you never get a chance to experience it that way.
The greatest, you know, names in creativity have always broken the mold completely. They've done something that nobody imagined was possible, whether it's in science or art or whatever. They've done it in a way that is different, and other people have thought, no, you can't do it like that. It's that can't be done. And then they do it that way because they have a mind, an open mind, a creativity that just says, this can be done in a different way, or I can achieve this. And it doesn't matter how hard, you know, how many mistakes I make on the way, it's going to happen in a new way. And then we admire them so enormously.
Yeah, you have to trust and take the leap into the dark.
Definitely.
I'm hoping that your new cottage in the country helps crystallize these ideas even more, and as you're doing your lectures and, of course, the practicing and performing. But as always, it's such a pleasure to talk with you, Robert.
Oh, I'm sorry we've run out of time.
I know. I know. Until next month, thank you so much, and we will chat in November.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Internationally renowned cellist and Lake Effect contributor Robert Cohen joins us every month for a segment that we call On That Note. You can hear more of our segments together at wuwm.com.